It is now 11 a.m. On March the 8th, 1990, and this is another audio history tape from Morehead State University. And I'm visiting with Eddie Gasper, who is the artistic director of the Red River Dance and Performing Company, located at 824 Main in Fargo. Mr. Gasper, I've had a nice visit with Kathy, and I learned that you came here on a short term with Mr. Hansen of Morehead State.
That's right. I was hired originally to work in the theater department there as a director choreographer, and it was one of those things that all contracts in theater, I mean, you just figured your agent would send you out, or you would get you a job, or you would apply for a job and go, and it was always considered a short term. Could be from 1 month to 6 months to a year, and so when we first came out here, we really had, intention of staying, because at the time, as I say, you were so used to working from contract to contract. But so it was, I stayed the second year, still connected with the theater department, and then, of course, as the company started and gotten so involved with that, that I found that I was being kind of torn between too many things, and so I had to devote more time to the, you know, to the dance company. But my 2 years with MSU, of course, working with Dr. Hansen, who I respect very highly, and what he's done for that theater department there. And so it was a great opportunity to work with him.
Were you pleasantly surprised at the artistic level of many activities in Fargo Moorhead?
Well, what impressed me really is that normally when you're on the road and you pull into a town, be it you're performing or what activity, the first thing you do is you always wonder if at the hotel find out if they have a in town what's happening. Then the other thing you always check out is, the second thing is you check out the newspaper to see what is in their entertainment section. Then the third, you really check the telephone book, just for curiosity of what is happening in the town. And I was really amazed. In fact, when I arrived here for the interview for the job, I called that evening after being here a day, and I called Kathy and I said, she said, ask me what it was like there, and I said, well, that's very flat. But I said, boy, you know what impresses me? I said, they have a community theater, they got an opera, they got a symphony, they got three universities here with theater departments. I said, there is so much in the arts. And I said, they got a museum. I said, it's just amazing for a town this size. You know, having been working in the more larger metropolises like Cleveland and New York and Los Angeles and what have you. So, yeah, I was really impressed. I couldn't get over it per capita, the amount of arts that is here.
Your wife said that you had been on the move, both of you, together and apart. And when you got married, you had decided to raise family, and this appeared to be an excellent place to settle down.
Well, yes, it's... At the time we moved here, we had basically we've been living in a trunk or a suitcase, you might say, and Melanie was very young, our firstborn, and we'd also had our secondborn, Matthew. And when Matthew kind of came upon the scene, I said, you know, we better start thinking of settling down someplace. And so, again, that was the other thing. You know, I said, boy, if it worked out, the possibility of staying here would be nice. I said, because we got a great school system. And I said, there's kind of a comfortable feeling. And of course, you have so used to kind of the hectic pace that one goes through in New York, and now all of a sudden to come into something, you know, more normal. And then we had lived in apartments and hotels with basically our lives together. And now to all of a sudden think about settling someplace, a home, was something that was such a luxury, to think of a home instead of just an apartment or a hotel room. So with the children, we thought, well, maybe it's about time, we better really think about settling down.
Tell me about your youth. Were you a Midwestern?
I was originally born in Dearborn, Michigan, a suburb of Detroit, or the Ford Motor Company, I guess you could say. And I went to school there. I got introduced to dance through my uncle, who was a performer, a hoofer, as one might say, tap dancer. He'd been in vaudeville, burlesque, and I guess he went through somewhat the same feeling of, you know, finally thinking he'd better settle down. But when he was in the area performing, be it nightclubs or be staying at the house, and he started to teach me little routines. And then he found out with he and his partner, anytime they did play within the Detroit area, all the way, even as far as Toledo, they would get me down there to dance in between these two big gentlemen. And that is, I imagine I was 5, 6 in there. And in fact, I think I had my first set of tails my uncle had made for me when I was around, six, maybe seven. And so that was my taste into so-called theater or into dance. And then after my uncle retired, he and his partner retired, decided to start a studio. So that kind of kept me going into that element of still dancing, you know. But I spent all the way through high school. I know my parents wanted me to go to college, and then I realized that at that time there was very few colleges that had a theater department. And if they did have a theater department, universities happened to be very expensive. And of course, my dad, having been an engineer, was very kind of hoping that I would go to college and find some normal job, as one might put it, instead of, not that he was against it, he just couldn't see any future to it. And which is, you know, it's a very hard career, I think, in the arts, anyway. Because you never know where your next meal is coming from.
Were any of your other members of your immediate family artistically inclined or show business inclined?
No. It's only been my uncle, my brother followed in my dad's footsteps in the sense of becoming an engineer. And actually has his own company now, making electronics. I just know that my parents loved music. The music was being played all the time in our house. I was those old 78s and record players, and so I guess I was surrounded by music all the time. You know, not that. But I'm the only one who ventured out to decide to try and make a living, so to speak.
And did this occur, to start with, somewhat as Kathy, around the Chicago area? Ultimately to New York?
It started more in the Detroit area, and as I say, as my uncle had started the studio, then pretty soon I found myself, he was booking me, and there's two little other fellows. He put an act together. It was the only barbershop quartet in existence, consisting of three members. So we were billed as that, and we found we were doing political shows. When the election years, we'd be doing political shows, and then we were doing fraternal order shows. And at the same time, I guess I was in every production that was ever produced while I was in high school. So my training came through that era, you know. But yeah, it seems to me I was dancing in nightclubs and, as I say, shows anywhere. I think he would book us anywhere. Or there were state fairs, carnivals. Yeah, we even danced in carnivals.
Would I know his name?
I don't think so. He worked in, they were in what they call it, in vaudeville there were circuits. There was the O'Keefe Circuit, then there was the O'Keefe Midwest Circuit. But his area, I mean, basically was Michigan and the O'Keefe Circuit, say Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, I think it could be Missouri into, you know, as I say, Cleveland area. So there was that whole, at the time, the O'Keefe Circuit. You
know. Keith Arp.
Yeah, Keith Arp, right.
But then you, did you take some specialized training while you were appearing? Were you working hard in that way?
No, I was one of those, I suppose you might call gifted. I know my uncle used to get very kind of disgusted or mad at me because he said, Ed, you practice more. I think. Twofold, I love to dance, but I love sports. I love sports. I love playing ball. My folks being from Canada, of course, at one time I was going to be a hockey player, then I was going to be a figure skater. Seems like, as well as dance shoes, I had ice skates. And
your father, an engineer, had come from Canada to Detroit. For employment.
Yeah, he got my mother and
what part of Canada?
Near a little town kind of northwest of Winnipeg, to a little town called Mintonis. A whistle stop, as my mother used to say, and that was about it. But they had come down, well actually my dad's not from Canada, my mother's from Canada, my dad was from Pennsylvania, but when my mother's family migrated down from Canada to Detroit, then that's where my mother and dad met, because he was working, at the time, he was working as a printer. He was a printer for 14 years and then decided to go back to night school, and in fact he graduated from, for his engineering degree when I graduated from grade school.
Is Gaspar a Welsh name?
No, it's a Hungarian name. Of course, the lineage of the family, I would say, I guess I'm a League of Nations, you might say. My mother is a McPherson, so that's pretty Scotch. My dad, of course, as I say, his lineage is French and Hungarian.
Tell me about your brothers and sisters.
I have no sisters, just one brother. He's, as I say, followed more in what my dad wanted of his sons, in the sense of that engineering. Went to school in Dearborn, or Detroit, and then went to MIT. And he had that stint in Vietnam. He was there in Vietnam, working on these surveillance planes was actually what his job was. And then when he came back, he went back to from Vietnam. He went back into the service, back into college, and then finished and got his degree in engineering, electronic engineering. Now he has a very thriving company, and in Detroit. Oh no, well it's not Detroit; it's in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
I told Kathy, your wife, that I had seen in your choreography a lot of Bob Fosse, and she agreed, and it was no surprise since you had considerable professional connection with Mr. Fosse. I told her that I saw the speed and the wing-to-wing movements, and I would sit there on the campus out here and see her Christmas productions or other productions. And it reminded me of that, which is no surprise.
Well, I spent, I mean, from, as I say, when I finally decided to go to New York, then, of course, pounded the pavements there, and then as every young artist starved for a period of time until that first show, first job that you got, and then of the many shows that I was in, within that, that's when I first met Bob Fosse, and I auditioned for him and, of course, made the show, and he was a dancer in a show. It was at the time called Little Me. It was starring Sid Caesar. And from that acquaintance or working for him there, then the next show that, or during Little Me, Bob Fosse asked me, he said that he was doing some pre-production, the possibility of a new show, and would I do some pre-production with him? Because he'd work, and I said I would love to, I'd be honored to. And from that beginning, of course, I was with him for about 10, 11 years, something in that order. And I worked with him in, there was another show. Didn't last too long, one of his. Everyone thinks that Bobby had all smash hits. He didn't. There was those failures that he had, too.
What year did Little Me open?
Oh, and let's see, 62, I think it is, something like that. I'm not positive yet. I guess I can... You know, someone always asks, well, do you know years? You sometimes even say, well, how old are you? Two things. You either lied about your age so much on the radio, because every audition you took, you always say, well, you always say, well, I wonder, I think they're looking for 24-year-olds, or I think they're looking for kids, and or they're looking for more mature. So you went in, as soon as they would say, how old are you? You always try to think, what are they looking for? And so then someone honestly and seriously said, well, Ed, how old are you? I'd say, come on, let's see. And I'd have to think how old I was, because I'd played or made believe of such age periods that I really got confused myself. So when, and also when it gets into shows, it's like, well, what year was a show? I can tell you the order of the shows that I was in, but years, what years? Because it seems you're going from one show and then you audition for another show, and then, you know. So I really have to think. I have it on my resume. I can go back and look and say, oh yeah, in 1962 I did this, in 1970.
We're talking about the 60s.
Yes.
These shows in which you appeared, were you a line?
I started in the chorus. And as you know, you always hope for that. First, that little special bit you might do in the chorus, and then finally hoping to get a specialty part so that you now no longer were under a, well, I guess you always look for that principal contract. You had two contracts with the Actors' Equity. One was a chorus equity contract, and the other was a principal actors or contract. So you were always hoping for that one, what they call the white contract principle. And so through it, through the period time and your learning experience too, as well from the learning, it's a training ground as well. I mean, you know, you're always learning, that you finally get a small part or become a principal dancer. And that's really how I moved up. Like from I was principal dancer in a show called Can Can.
Like a score.
Yes, Cole Porter, yeah. So you move up in those over the years with your experience.
This pre-production duties, was that interviews, selection, or deciding at the call, or what would it be involved?
Well, in a pre-production is, as I go through now here, like you get an idea for a show or a number. And before you work with your actual dancers, you want to have some idea of what you would like to do. Well, when Bob Fosse would have, let's say he was contracted to do a show, and So knowing that once you start rehearsal, you have, you're responsible to, for, let's say, 33 people. Now, if you call them into a studio, and they look at you and they expect you to be brilliant. And so they, you're kind of looking at them and they're looking at you and saying, well, you're the choreographer or you're the director, you know, you teach us. And so when you're being looked at by all these people and saying, well, expecting the brilliance that comes out, it's not always there. So what you try and do in pre-production is to have some idea where you're going to go. It is not the complete thing. You don't work out the exact routines, but you have a semblance or you have an idea how you're approaching a certain number or a certain scene. And a lot of times in pre-production, you know, we call it just kind of dinking around. You're just doing nothing, you know, you're just fooling around. And all of a sudden you say, oh, you know, why don't you try this, Ed? Hey, you know, hear that phrase of music? Let's try this, and it'll be great. So you really, it's experimental is really what you're doing. Experimenting with music, a scene, or a look. You know. Having worked with that man, he worked an awful lot. Bob always worked with a look in mind, of a character in the stage. You know.
There was a highly biographical movie, Chicago and Jazz.
Paul Jazz.
He was portrayed as rather a weird character. How would you describe him?
Well,
he was a genius, your wife said.
Oh, he was.
And allowed, as a result, a certain genius.
Yeah. Well, there's a certain idiosyncrasies that I suppose that every genius. That we all have. You don't have to be a genius to have those idiosyncrasies, so to speak. A lot of it, you say autobiographical. He used himself, but not, I mean, there was a lot of things. There was moments that in watching a movie or viewing it there, I said, oh, that is Bobby. And then there's other times of saying, no, that's not, you know, it's Hollywood or. Again, he may have thought, well, that would be boring for anybody else. So, I mean, they put that theatrical touch to it.
This show revealed the stress, anxiety, and that is no surprise.
No, that's very true with him. That's the true part of him. I mean, he was a perfectionist. He wanted, his whole thing was that nothing was, he always felt his work. Well, we always think of work can be better or your creation can be better, but he was obsessed with perfection, trying to get it better. There's got to be a better way. And then he was very, believe it or not, very insecure in many aspects because of that.
How did you first meet your wife?
As you progressed through your career, from let's say chorus dancer to principal dancer, then maybe actor, singer, dancer into that other echelon. Then as a dancer you start to, you break into assisting people, other choreographers. So you're always learning your craft. Then you finally break in, or you hope to choreograph. Some people do and some don't. I had now moved into that element of choreographing my own things. On the fringe of still associated with Bobby, but basically Mr. Fossey said, Ed, I think you should do some of your own things. He encouraged me, actually. He said, I never want to lose you, but I think you should go out on your own. Well, there was a young lady who was on Laugh-In at the time, named Judy Carne, the Sakatumi girl, a girl from England. We used to get the water thrown on her all the time. She was to do an act, and there was a young dancer who would work for me, happened to know her, and said, you know, if you're looking for someone to choreograph, you should see about Eddie Gasper. He was close to Bob Fosse. I mean, if you're looking for that type of style. So I was contacted by her agent, and I started to put an act together for her. And so with the responsibility of putting the act together was auditioning people. And I wanted to two girls and three boys is how it started. So I was auditioning. I walked into a class, because you start to scout the classes that are going on, and I there was a marvelous teacher called Luigi in New York, a jazz teacher, and I went up to see him and told him, I said, I'm looking for dancers, Luigi. And he said, oh, he said, see this class. And that's when I saw Kathy dance. She was taking class. So I asked her to audition for me. She was with Doc Severinsen's group, the Young Americans at the time, entertaining group that kind of went around with his orchestra when they would perform other than the Johnny Carson show. And it so turned out that she didn't know she was auditioning for marriage, I guess. Judy Carn decided that she did not want any ladies in her act. But in the meantime, we had started the date while I was in. So I started to work on the act, and she started to, I asked her if she would kind of assist me. She's very talented, very, she picks up, she's got a mind like a trap, you know, she sees it, she can do it, you know. So that's how we met, and then as I say, circumstances from that dating ended up in a marriage and then a family, and here we are.
This business of picking up routine very rapidly, it's an extraordinary thing, and for an outsider like myself, it seems almost impossible, but I gather that you can take a lineup of choremes and very quickly they will get the routine.
Yeah, well, it's what happens. Your mind becomes, and your eye becomes adapted to quick to absorb. It's like, I'm not saying they're photographic, but with your training, your movement and your coordination, if you know that you're to walk this way, or you, if you're, an arm is to extend and a leg is to extend the other way, it comes from your training that you've had, that, because you're going back to a basis. You may be changing all of those steps around, or just movement, doesn't have to be steps, but movement. So it's their coordination from their training. They're quickly to adapt. Some people, as I say, some people are just, can, you know, right behind it. It's a great example of it is I've seen an act done where, in speaking, where as I'm speaking, someone is saying the same words right behind you, but they're, and it's only a second or so. And it's listening, you know, I've seen this done, and it sounds like an echo. But you see, their mind is so adapted to listening and tuning in, and that's what happens with dancing. Kathy is one of those persons you can look at, and she's right. You know, I'd say I'm not even finished, and she's finished. We have two young boys who, you know, who are principal dancers. They have that same type of mind. It's just, you know, well, I guess I used to have that with Bob Fosse. You know, I guess that's why our relationship, because I was able to, in a sense, second guess him. You know.
You said when you first came as an employee, you were quite impressed by the community. And when you decided to stay and thought about the studio that you have today, did you have misgivings about launching a studio and acquiring students and all the rest of it?
I guess I never had time to think about the misgivings. it seems once it started, it seems like you've been so busy. And it really, when I was at MS, what some of my students, well, is as in any, well, see, MS is at a quarter system. So in 10 weeks, you have a certain course. Well, if you had a course called stage movement, for instance, that was only 10 weeks. Then you might have movement for the stage, which is another 10 weeks. Well, that's a very short time, really, for someone who has an interest in dance. You can only give a base. But I had some young people who said, Ed, and asked me, they said, could you think about, or could we, you know, maybe after classes or during the, you know, evening, ever think about are teaching us more. And because we really like to learn more about the dancing element. And so I said, I'm so busy with my own academic schedule plus the shows at NS. And I said, let me talk to my wife. Maybe she wants it. So that's how it really started. Because I went to Kathy and I said, I have some talented kids who I have an interest in dance. And I said, I cannot offer it to them. I'm too busy. And I said, they've taken the two courses I have. There is no more offered. And so she said, well, I need to get back in condition because we'd had our third child here. Our son was born. In fact, we arrived in the fall and our son was born. Our third born was only about 2 months after we were here. So she said, well, maybe to kind of get back into condition, she would do that. Then she found out that she asked her, my young daughter wanted to take classes on her. And Kathy started to realize that she felt there was a lack of training in the community. And through the wants of people, so we never even thought shortcomings. We just thought, these kids want it, and either, you know, there should be better training. So it just kind of, you know, it was with no real intent, it just kind of started to snowball.